Good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter, set and ready. This is Nick Wright, good to go. You got your tweet out. We know it's coming up on the show.
Yes,
it is,
ma'am,
going to be a good one. Tom Brady is ready to put Julian Edelman to work. El Bell is almost ready to play again. And Monday Night Football put Pat Mahomes on a national stage. That's where we start. Once again, Mahomes came up big, but it took him a while to turn heads in this one. His only touchdown pass came with 6 minutes left in the fourth to Travis Kelce. Next drive, play the game. Mahomes gets out of trouble, converts a first down. How? With his left hand. Chiefs then take the lead with under 2 minutes to play. Kareem Hunt in for the score and the lead. Next drive, fourth down. Broncos with a chance. They cannot convert. Chiefs remain undefeated with a 27-23 win. Here is Pat Mahomes after the game.
It speaks volumes to this team and, like, how much heart and determination that we have, that the defense got up there, made a lot of key stops, and the offense just kept fighting. The offensive line kept fighting, the running backs, the receivers, everybody just kept fighting, and we came out with the win. I felt Vaughn on my back, and I knew I couldn't throw it with my right hand, and I knew we needed the first down, and so I kind of just, like, shot-putted it to Tyreek, and he got the first down and made a great play. You just got to get the ball in their hands somehow.
Patrick Mahomes is a great quarterback. They got a great offense over there. I mean, it's nothing new. It's not a surprise, you know, what type of, you know, team they are. We just got to capitalize and make our plays.
I love this team and just how we fight. I mean, we hadn't necessarily been tested in this situation yet, and it just showed that every phase of the ball, special teams, defense, and offense, that everybody can step up and everybody can make plays. And I knew we had it, and I'm glad we got to show it for everybody else, and we're going to keep it rolling as the season goes.
So we finally got to see a little bit more of the human side of Patrick Mahomes. He wasn't Superman yesterday, but he was still good enough to get it done, and the Chiefs remain undefeated. What was your reaction, CeCe, to Mahomes' big night last night?
My reaction is that Denver's one of the top five environments in the NFL. Now, you're talking about the Monday night stage, divisional game. This is the type of performance you want from your quarterback for the next 10 or 15 years. Like, you want him to be able to not have to always be flashy, but to have some grit, to have some moxie, to have some things that, yeah, it's not going to be easy for him. And when he faces Denver, it shouldn't be easy. With the defensive players that they have, the scheme that they run, no, pro football shouldn't be easy. So I like the struggle. I like the fact. I like being down 10 points in the fourth quarter because that's when you're able to see what teams are made of. Their offense is going to be spectacular. But if you're a Chiefs fan, you're going to have to hold your breath because that defense last night, I think they only were on the field 26 minutes. And we saw the damage that Case did to them. So, yes, Mahomes was spectacular. He saved the day. I love to see it. I love not his best game of the season, but what he accomplished, I think, was his best performance of the season. Well, because it's a message to that other team. It's a message to Von Miller. You see, Von said, no, I wasn't surprised. This is what we're going to have to expect out of Kansas City. So realizing how hard it is to win a divisional game on the road, I thought it was a tremendous accomplishment. I thought it was Pat Mahomes' best football game.
This was Pat Mahomes' fewest yards per attempt this year, fewest touchdowns this year, lowest quarterback rating this year. This was Pat Mahomes' best game this year. Because of what you said, they're in Mile High on Monday Night Football. Von Miller is locked and loaded. Bradley Chubb is getting his legs as a pro. That Chris Harris, still Chris Harris. That defense was there. They struggled early. Aside from Kareem Hunt, the offense was not clicking. And Pat Mahomes didn't make the critical mistake early. This is the game that I would have thought, okay, this is where he's going to have a couple picks, because it's not coming early, because they aren't moving the ball, because he could get frustrated. He didn't do that. He got a touchdown with his legs early, and then in the fourth quarter was spectacular. The fourth quarter is where not only they won this game, but where Pat Mahomes had that signature moment, another signature moment, I would say, on second and 30, getting him to a manageable third and seven, and the big play to Demetrius Harris right there, which put him in position for the game-winning touchdown. The questions we had is, okay, how are they going to react on the road in a tough environment? Check. How's he going to react against a very good defense? Check. And how is he going to react when they don't jump out to an early lead? Because the Chiefs have been the best first quarter team in football. Check. They were down 10 points in the fourth quarter. Denver hadn't lost a game at home with a double-digit fourth quarter lead in almost 15 years. Like, so all of those questions we had were checked, even though statistically it was clearly his worst game of the year. I think I agree with C. It was his best game of the year.
Did you walk away from that game thinking, okay, maybe this wasn't flash in the pan for three games? This could be sustainable. This team may be that good. They understand how to face adversity. They know how to win. And it seemed like they were calm when they were losing, which are really hard things to see, something you talk about all the time, learn how to win, learn how to lose. Mm-hmm. Does it look like this Chiefs success could be sustainable?
Yeah, Nick and I have talked about Pat Mahomes. We did an interview with him.
Before he came into the draft.
Yeah, before the draft at Fox and everything. So we like his talent. We thought that he had a big-time arm. We thought that he had some intangible stuff, a lot like Baker Mayfield, but without the attention on him. So we liked him getting ready for the draft. We loved him going to Kansas City because he wasn't going to have to play immediately, and also because Andy Reid was there. And then now all this talent starting to mature around him. You know, this league is a situational league. You need to be in a good situation. And Pat Mahomes, for one of the young quarterbacks, he's in one of the best situations. And Andy Reid coaching him up. The reason why you could see in yesterday's game, it's not just about potential. Man, they weren't trying to protect him. Man, he made a lot of plays on his own. But the flexibility inside that offense, like, they weren't trying to protect him in the play calling. Like, they felt like any play in their playbook, they can call it at any time, and you could see that. Them taking chances on fourth down early in the game, it lets you know the confidence that they have in their quarterback and the different formations and variations of attacking the defense. You could see that not only from the beginning of the game, but even late into the fourth quarter after the quarterback struggled, Andy Reid wasn't pulling back and being more conservative. So it's a great showing by Pat Mahomes, and Nick has been on Pat Mahomes for a long time, even before he went to Kansas City.
I think we knew at Texas Tech he had the arm talent. What we are learning now in the pros are his escapability, which how many of those highlights are out of the pocket? They showed a stat on during the game last night that I couldn't believe. It was the most passing yards out of the pocket of any player in 10 years, had 192 yards passing out of the pocket. The poise we're now seeing and the accuracy. I did not know he was going to be this accurate of a quarterback. Now,
well, again, this is the thing. He played that way in college, but because he's at not one of the premier schools,
yes,
we didn't give him credit for
correct.
Him being accurate. We just said, oh, man, this guy's a gunslinger. This guy runs around, makes plays. Oh, this guy is, you know, Texas Tech's version of Brett Favre. He's the, you know, the poor man's version of Brett Favre. If he had been at a different school, maybe we might have given him credit. But
oh, sure.
He's still drafted in the first round. Kansas City moved up all those spots.
It traded away. The Chiefs, and this is where the Chiefs deserve credit. The Chiefs were coming off a playoff year.
Yes.
Chiefs fans at the time did not want them to use a first-round pick, to use two first-round picks, essentially, on a guy who wasn't going to play. And they did it because they thought they had to trade in front of the Saints, actually, because they thought the Saints were going and Sean Payton were going to draft him. So they move in front of the Saints to take him. Like, I believe right now, this moment, the Chiefs are the best team in the AFC. Now, C brings up the defense, and the defense is incredibly problematic, and I can no longer bake into, well, once Eric Berry gets back, because I don't know what that actual prognosis is. But there is one thing, shockingly, this Chiefs defense does great, and last night was another example of it. They are the number one third down defense in football. Teams against them this year are now 10 of 42 on third down, less than 25%. That is a way to be bend, not break. If you're giving up a lot of yards, but you can find a way to get off the field on third down, the Chiefs have given up as many third downs all year as the Patriots converted themselves on Sunday. So I don't know if that's sustainable. And you see, I mean, even Case, and he wasn't that accurate yesterday, sliced him up some. The touchdown run that Freeman had was embarrassing. They had six guys missed tackles. The defense is going to be a problem. But in a flawed AFC, when you have an offense this good and a coach as
they
good
don't
of
have
a,
to be perfect.
I don't think they have to be perfect. I just think they don't need a top 10 defense. They just can't have a bottom five defense, which right now we'll see if the third down defense can sustain them.
Kansas City Chiefs, now one of two undefeated teams in the league, 4-0. Coming up, will anybody be able to stop the Patriots now that Julian Edelman is back?
Oh, yeah, Edelman. Now they can't be stopped. Last week we was crisis.
That's a tease. Here, first things first, we'll get to Julian Edelman's return to the Patriots in a second. But first, back to last night's game. Mahomes showing off what he can do. A little ambidextrous and everything. Left-handed throw.
Now, this reminded me of Brett Favre right here.
Yes.
I thought he was going to throw it, but I didn't think he was going to throw it left-handed.
Von Miller on his ankles. And who was the first person to tell us he thought he reminded him of Brett Favre? Former teammate. I'll give you a clue. His interesting hairdo.
Oh, Tamba Ali.
There you
yeah,
go.
I mean, I think Tamba heard that from someone else.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. He don't have a Rolodex of football encyclopedia like that. So right. I think he heard that from someone.
All right, more from last night's game. Chiefs corner Eric Murray stealing the ball from Jeff Harmon for an interception.
Eric Murray found out this weekend the Chiefs tried to trade for Earl Thomas to take his spot. And he responded by having his best game as a Chief.
Yeah.
Had a pass defense, six tackles, and this play.
Harriman wide open, Case a little underthrowing, just the way Case normally does. Put it out in front of him. You got a big play. He makes a tremendous recovery. Takes it away from Harriman.
All right, let's do a little NBA preseason.
You know Harriman's a Buckeye?
Yeah.
Magic, Sixers, Orlando's Aaron Gordon defies physics.
You know what? I'm going to say Aaron Gordon. I was expecting a reverse dunk here. Supposed to be the best dunker in the league. Says he's the best
dunker
in the
league. Man, he can't get to the rim going through a seven-footer. Like, he couldn't go through his body, Nick. Like, how's he going to get on the other side of the rim? Tell me.
I hold Aaron Gordon says he's the best dunker in basketball. It's preseason. Might as well try it.
Yeah, you know when they're the best dunker, Nick? When the lane's open.
When the lane's open, we didn't have Joel Embiid right there.
Yeah, Joel Embiid wasn't having
that. Boom on Joel.
Moving on to the Patriots, coming off a much, much needed win Sunday and getting a much, much needed shot in the arm this week. Julian Edelman returns after serving a four-game suspension. He also missed the 2017 season with an ACL injury. If you're wondering about his rust, Tom Brady says, do not worry about his rust. Here's what he thinks Edelman contributes to the Patriots' offense.
I think that's the thing about Julian, his explosiveness in the routes, in and out of breaks. It's very comforting for a quarterback to see a guy get open really early in a route. And, you know, Julian, we ask a lot of him. I mean, he plays a lot of different spots. I think he's capable of moving in and out of different locations and kind of specialty type plays. So there's a lot that he does well. And, you know, hopefully it's a smooth transition. And we've got to prepare this week. It's going to be a big week of prep. And then we'll go out there and play Thursday night and see where we're at.
All right, so the Patriots play the Colts this Thursday. They will have Julian Edelman back. What does his return mean, CC, for the Patriots offense?
Well, of all the guys suspended, Edelman has the worst deal because he's coming back on a Thursday night, less practice time. They're not going to be running around a whole bunch. Now, he was there all of training camp. He does have chemistry that has built up over the years, but it should be noted, it's a Thursday. He got three less practices. Huge difference compared to the other guys that are coming back on Sunday or the other games. But he's one of the best slot receivers that we have in the game. Tom's very comfortable with him. I think that's the number one thing. And he's so familiar with the offense. Outside of Gronk, he's the most flexible player that they have, that they can go from game plan to game plan, or they can go back on other years that they've done things together. He's hard to take away for the defense. The reason why? Because he lines up in so many different spots. Like if you try to match him up with another corner, Belichick will put him in the backfield, and then your reads become complicated as a defense. But his overall chemistry with Tom has made him one of the best slot receivers, and they're trying to throw the ball as quick as possible. Tom mentioned, it's a relief to be able to get a guy who gets open so quick. And the reason why, because they have so many pick plays. He has so many option routes where you can't be right. A lot of times on those option routes, he is attacking the technique. So in the slot, if you play inside, he's going to leverage you, stick you in, and break out. If you play soft zone, play to his outside, he's going to head nod you and sit in the zone. And if you overplay him and play outside, he's going to break it inside or go across the middle. Him and Tom Brady have already worked out all those things. So you can expect to get good results from him immediately. And what you're going to see is less responsibility on Dorsett, Cordell Patterson for those guys. So Belichick will try to get them into doing one or two things that they do well, because he knows Edelman has a whole handful of things that he adds to their offense immediately.
The Dorsett, Cordell Patterson, even Josh Gordon part of this cannot be overstated. That we've talked about how you've got guys that are twos trying to be ones, or guys that are fours trying to be threes, and Edelman and Gronk being there is going to dramatically ease their workload and ease what the team is asking of them. But I'm not ashamed to admit this. I don't understand Julian Edelman, and I want you to help me understand it. See, he's not that fast. He's not very big. I know you can line him up in the backfield.
What do you consider fast?
He's not a 4-4 guy.
Well, how many? There's not a lot of people alive that run 4-4.
Of course.
I think people that talk about football, they think that, man, everyone, man, I ran a 4-6.
No, right, but I
knew average speed in the NFL is a 4-6. Larry Fitzgerald, a little under a 4-6.
So here's my thing, though. But you're right, you ran a 4-6, but you also believe, and I think you're right, best hands in NFL history. You're 4 inches taller than him, you are tougher than him, and you could play every wide receiver position. So I want to understand, I know Edelman's effective. I look at the numbers, he averages 70 yards a game, sort of 1,000 yards a season with the Patriots, but you can't line him up on the outside. He's a pure slot guy. He's not very, what makes him so effective? What is it about Edelman?
The same thing that makes all slot receivers, in and out of your break. How quick can you get in and out of your break? How tough are you? Because Edelman's toughness is really underrated. His durability. And can I be in sync? Can I give the indicators to the quarterback that are going to be real ones, not false ones? Well, what are false indicators? Giving the quarterback the impression that you're getting ready to do something, the quarterback knows when I'm getting ready to stop. Why? My head drops and my arm stops. But sometimes, really good receivers, they can give the quarterback an indicator that, oh, the defense doesn't know I'm going to stop, but only the quarterback knows, because only my body drops. My head doesn't drop. My hands don't drop. And Tom Brady and Edelman, they have that worked out. He's one of the best route runners that we have. He has great hands. Route recognition as far as defense, he's tremendous. He's a student of the game. And let's not forget, he played quarterback in college. So he understands offense, offensive concepts. The two other guys that had that position before him were just as good or even better. Number one in Wes Welker, and before that in Troy Brown. So he does have those attributes that good slot receivers do have, but number 12 enhances all those abilities, and that's why they've been so successful with their slot receivers for a number of years.
That's such a good point, that sometimes chemistry is as important as intangibles, especially when Brady knows his receivers so well. How do defenses now? Won't they key up on him knowing that he's going to be the best receiver out there and that you may not even have Gronk? Is that going to take away?
It's a number count. If they don't have Gronk, he becomes the primary. So the initial coverage is to how can we limit him, not take him away. The reason why is because you're going to give New England too much information. If you commit two people to him, they are going to go other ways. James White, Sony Michel, you will start to see that trifecta. I think with Gronk, if he's injured, those are the three players you have to key on with New England. Edelman, Sony Michel, and James White. The other guys, they're going to have to beat you.
And you mentioned that Edelman's in a rough spot because it's a Thursday night game. Should be noted, Adam Schefter reported that Gronk's injury is not serious, but given the fact that they play on Thursday, it's going to be much harder for him to play than if they played Sunday. It seems like he would be definitely be able to go. With Thursday, he's going to be questionable. So that's obviously, they might have to wait another game. They haven't had a game with Brady, Gronk, Edelman, and White since November of 16. They might have to wait another game or another week for all four of those guys to be there.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, Le'Veon Bell says he's coming back, but will it be too little, too late for the Pittsburgh Steelers? Next on First Things First. The MLB postseason is here, so forget the stats, forget the streaks, because the only thing that matters is October. The NLDS begins Thursday only on FS1.
All right, let's go Dodgers today. Sorry, Rockies fans. We got a Dodgers World Series future at play.
All right, hold on. Sticking with baseball, time for us to go viral. The aforementioned Dodgers took down the Rockies last night to clinch their sixth straight NL West title, and Yasiel Puig has big plans for Big Blue in the postseason.
Going for more. Hey, Atlanta, I see you soon, baby. And the next one, Chicago, Colorado, no matter who's going, we're going to beat it. And we're going to the World Series again. And this time, we're going to win the World Series. 2018, the big party is here in Los Angeles.
I think he said it all, guys.
Yeah.
No questions. No preguntas.
Hey, you know what? Toes down, baby. No question for him. I'm winning.
Oh, man, he's got his shirt off. He's got the gold chain flowing. And now he's drenching me with beer.
Yasiel Puig, one of the most fun players in baseball, burst onto the scene. Little controversy. Then his play deteriorated a bit. Now he's back. It makes me so happy. What, see?
He don't need to be biting down that bottle and everything. I checked him out. He obviously hadn't taken advantage of the dental plan.
Oh,
he got a couple little, he got it set up in the front. He can get that fixed. And who drinks beer when they had all those bottles of champagne?
I don't like champagne. Listen, it's been a long time since you've drank. I don't like, if you offered me a beer or a glass of champagne, I'd take a
beer.
Yeah,
you don't have no class, though. I expect that. Like, hey, that's the right answer. Oh, great. Way to go, Nick. I threw you a lob. Way to jump into the net.
I'm just being honest. Listen, man.
So, are you always being honest?
Always. I've never told a lie on television in my life. Actually.
Literally, look, do not believe that.
Jenna, I feel like you would be a champagne drinker.
I like champagne.
We got a lot of lies on that side of the table.
Oh, how dare you?
Wait, that you don't believe?
No, that one, I don't think that's what he's referring to. That
one. Oh, okay, gotcha. Cool, so we're all good now. Time for stories to start your morning. Moving on, Monday Night Football. Chiefs beat the Broncos 27-23. However, Broncos had a chance to win when Case Keenum missed Demaryius Thomas near the end zone, 22 seconds left. All right, Chris, how did Thomas get so open here?
They're in cover two. There's going to be a soft spot in the zone, deep down the middle or deep up the sideline. If the safety stays inside, the cornerback in that situation, 22 seconds, he should have stayed with the wide receiver and jammed it potentially out of bounds to slow up his release. But this is Case got to hit that. NFL quarterback, you got to be able to hit a guy that's that wide open. They designed the right play. The safety stays inside because he's got his head on the number two receiver. You got to be able to complete that one.
And Case's second worst accuracy this year on wide open guys. I don't know if I'd call him wide open, but he was open. But if he does hit him, see, there's about to be a bad collision, right?
Oh, absolutely.
If that's a well-placed ball, it needs to be a well-placed ball, but the safety's coming downhill at him.
The thing you have in the new NFL, he can't hit you in the head, so he can't hurt you but so much. So as a wide receiver, the game is so much easier. You got to keep that ball on the field and force that safety.
Chiefs got lucky there.
All right, let's talk Kareem Hunt. Was a big part of the Chiefs' offense last night with 175 total yards and the game-winning touchdown. Nick, with all their star power, how important is Hunt to Kansas City?
Very important, and we hadn't seen this game from him yet. Now, if you listen to the people in Kansas City, the offensive lineman and Kareem Hunt, what they said was, listen, we could run the ball, but we're having so much success passing it, why would we? They needed to run the ball last night. It was the first game all year they weren't having success passing it, and Kareem Hunt kept them in this football game. He made some huge plays catching the ball, and on the ground, he is the defending rushing champ in the NFL.
I mean, he's a great rusher of the football. In the first four games, if there was something I was concerned about, it wasn't their inability to rush the ball. Because you know that's there. You know the weather's going to change. He becomes, outside of Mahomes, the most important chief. Because if their defense is going to continue to give up the amount of points and yards they're giving up, you're going to have to be able to run the ball to win that time of possession to keep that defense on the field less time.
All right, moving on. The Fitzmagic has apparently run out in Tampa Bay. The Bucs named Jameis Winston their starter after yanking Ryan Fitzpatrick at halftime of the Bears game. Jameis will have the benefit of the upcoming bye week to prepare for his first start. It'll come against the Atlanta Falcons. Was this the right move, CeCe?
They got one franchise quarterback in Tampa, and it's Jameis Winston. There was never a choice here. The coach said it after the game. Jameis Winston will probably be here long after I'm gone. Let's not forget this. What division do they play in, Nick?
The NFC South.
Oh, who happens to be the quarterbacks?
Three MVPs, Breeze, Cam, and Ryan.
Oh, okay. All right. And you're going to You're going to throw Fitzpatrick at them?
Well,
no, that's not going to happen. If Tampa Bay is ever going to win the division again, it's because of number three is their quarterback.
Fitzpatrick had an interesting quote about this, saying that he told, I think it was his dad, actually, that I'm either going to win the MVP this year or get benched. Basically, he was saying, I'm going to have to play at this level that I was in the first 2 weeks all year long, or I'm going to lose my job. And that mentality, I think, is maybe one of the reasons he lost.
The truth of the matter, he didn't have a job, all right? Jameis was always the starter. Jameis was suspended. So do you lose your starting spot because you're suspended? No.
Sure. The point I'm making is, but that speaks to the mentality we've always said Fitzpatrick has. It's why he can have those great games, but also those awful games, is he thinks, hey, if I got the whole year, I might be able to peel an MVP rather than be a caretaker.
Grab that hat and clipboard. You know what? Act smart.
All right, finally, Leonard Fournette will be out indefinitely after aggravating his already injured hamstring. Fournette had already missed weeks 2 and 3 with the injury and left during the first half against the Jets in week 4. Nick, how big of a deal is this for the Jaguars? Or are they getting used to life without Leonard Fournette?
I don't think it's as big of a deal as a lot of people believe. Now, I think there's a limited offense. I do not trust Blake Bortles. I don't love their wide receivers. So you might say, what? Well, then they've got to have Leonard Fournette. I think the discussion around Leonard Fournette is based off his second to last year in college and has been based off that for quite some time now. He is a big, bruising, powerful, intimidating guy. But in today's NFL and on that team, he's never been super productive. And he got lumped into, oh, Zeke was an early first-round pick. Gurley was an early first-round pick. Fournette was an early first-round pick. And now Saquon. He's never had the production of any of those guys or the production that Saquon looks like he's going to have. He's a career less than 4 yards per carry guy who gets injured a lot, who deals with this. He has nagging injuries, I should say. It's not like he has one major injury, but he's dealt with the hamstring before, dealt with the ankle in college. So there's a reason that the Jags have T.J. Yeldon, and I think that there's a reason that they are prepared to have Leonard Fournette in and out of the lineup.
I can understand why you're saying it's not a big deal. But the way their roster's put together, it's a huge deal. This offseason, they lost Hearns. They lost Allen Robinson, their wide receivers. They decided Dante Moncrief from Indianapolis was going to replace that productivity. Bring back Marcus Lee. Marcus Lee gets hurt. So they thought Marcus Lee was going to be a one or two guy, and he's never been a one or two guy. He's been a three or four at best. So the way they built their roster, their biggest offseason move was – what, Nick? Who did they go out and get?
What? Andrew Norwell.
Guard.
Yeah.
All right. Highest paid guard now in pro football. And the reason why you go out and do that, it's not for T.J. Yeldon. It's not for the wide receivers. It's because you have Leonard Fournette. They have one of the best offensive lines, one of the biggest, most physical offensive lines. The reason why you get that is because you have a big physical back. Doug Marrone, all right, offensive grinded out coach. Tom Coughlin. Offensive grinded out coach, top five defense. Their game plan to win games is with Fournette. So the reason why it's a big deal is not because he hadn't been productive as you would want. He doesn't have over 4 yards a carry, but their way to winning, they have Leonard Fournette in the blueprint. So they've designed a team that has Fournette in there. That's why I believe it's a bigger deal than what people would allude to because the way the team is built.
All right, let's talk about another running back now. An update in the Le'Veon Bell saga. According to reports, L. Bell does in fact want to play for the Steelers this season, and he will in fact join his teammates during the bye week in week 7. All right, so that means he would miss matchups against the Falcons and Bengals, and he'd return for that week 8 matchup against the Cleveland Browns. The Steelers are 28th in the NFL in rushing yards per game. 28th. So can the Steelers survive without him until week 8, CC?
I think the Steelers, and they've shown this through the last 30 years, they can sort of survive without any one player. Even when Ben's been knocked out of the lineup, they have survived. So they're going to survive. This is just and I think that we should use the L. Bell as a test case in the NFL for does the franchising tag, does it work? And if it does work, how is it supposed to work? Because I think ownership has done the players a disservice. When the players agreed to being the franchise tag with the collective bargaining agreement, I don't think that they understood the ramifications. And if a running back is franchised, It is not a good thing. We know Kirk Cousins went through this a couple times. Yeah, he got paid. Man, he got paid an astronomical amount of money in those 2 years they franchised him and still hit free agency. So a quarterback, what type of injury is going to alter his career? It's a lot different than a running back. L. Bell had 400 touches last year. At the age he's at, he said, man, you're going to put another 350 touches on his body? Like, I understand what he's doing. I understand the business side of things. My only problem with L. Bell is his lack of communication with his teammates. Now, football was a team sport, but every guy's an independent contractor. But you're relying on that other independent contractor so that we can all work together. So it becomes difficult when you can't have the same messaging to one of the guys that you're calling a brother, one of those guys you're calling a teammate. This is not your normal job. Like, we have a normal job. Everyone here has a responsibility. We all have individual contracts and everything. But I'm not relying on you guys like the way you do with a football team. And your word in that locker room, it does mean something. So my biggest problem is when he told the offensive lineman, I'm going to be there in a couple days. Because in doing that, now you put the lineman out there where they're getting ready to vouch for your holdout to the media. So now you made them look bad. So my only problem with L. Bell has been when he made his teammates look bad, and I just believe his agent got in his ear to change his messaging point. If he had told his teammates this summer, listen, guys, this second year of franchising, it's not going to be like year number one. I might not be there till the bye week. His teammates would have appreciated that. Their messaging would have been totally different. And I believe that he, from a PR standpoint, would be at a different point.
So he did an interview with Jeremy Fowler, who broke this story of ESPN. And he says that either it was miscommunication or something, because he's saying he didn't tell his teammates at any point when he was going to show up. Now, clearly, a lot of people in that locker room thought he did. So I don't know if it was miscommunication.
Well, let's do this. Let me tell you, he didn't tell them he wasn't going to show up.
Sure. That
so
is clear.
When you tell me you're not going to show up, what are you telling?
Or you don't say I'm not going to be
are.
There. Sure, absolutely.
And what else were they supposed to assume?
That he was going to do what he did last year. Fair enough. And so I just wanted, but the other part to this interview, I feel like he makes very salient points. He says, I always wanted to play football this year. And he says, I want to retire a Steeler. Now that might be out the window, but maybe it's not. What he said very clearly is that I did not think, when I didn't have guaranteed money after this year, it was a good move to put 400 touches on my body again. We've talked about it a lot. Most touches per game in NFL history, Le'Veon Bell. 405 touches last year. So he did have a very calculated approach, and I think we can all say the messaging got askew. That if he had said from the very beginning, I'm showing up at the bye, guys, just so everybody knows, then A, the story would have been put to rest, and B, I think you can make the argument for it that, hey, the Steelers didn't.
I don't think he knew. Why wouldn't you say that? If that's when you were going to show up, your plan was. I don't think he knew what his exact plan was.
No, he definitely didn't know. And that's why you had the miscommunication between him and his teammates.
Quick question, though. You heard what there were some angry players. There were some bruised players when all of this was first starting before the season started. How does a player come back into the locker room now and said, I'm going to need you guys
they
to
need
work
him.
For me? Yeah, they do need him. But when this first started, I forget, maybe it was Minj. We had a coach out here that said it's going to be tough, that relationship coming back in, for those guys to trust him and him to trust them again.
Everybody's got a job to do, but the trust between the players, what you say to one another, is different the type of trust you have for the organization.
So it gets forgotten.
It's not going to be forgotten, but I got a job to do. Like, you can't be a child. You got to grow up. I got grown man responsibility. Like, the offensive line, you know what they got to do? They got to block.
Yeah.
Regardless of who is back there. So I'm not going to be sitting around wondering, oh, man, this guy, does he appreciate me? Don't nobody care nothing about this. This is pro football. You got a job to do. I got a job to do. And we can coexist and not like each other and totally disagree and totally be able to function and it not be a problem.
There are guys in locker rooms that despise each other. Right? Like, there's 53 guys, that has to be the case. There are guys, they get in arguments about politics, about religion, about whatever it is, and everyone has to be a professional. The Villanueva or Ramon Foster or Pouncey all of a sudden being like, you know what, I'm going to let L. Bell get crushed here. I don't buy into that at all. I'm not saying that's what you're saying. But the other reason that I think it will be an easier transition is can we show America what the Steelers have been on the ground since after week one? oh, they've been the worst rushing team in the league. They need him. Like, that's the other part of this is if James Conner and his great story, if he was the story of the season, then maybe it's easier to hold on to those hurt feelings or that bitterness. They need Le'Veon Bell. Now, the question for these next 2 weeks, to circle back to what you originally asked, can they survive? They got Atlanta and they have Cincy. Those are two teams that have very bad pass defenses and this year very good offenses. So the Steelers are going to have to go ahead and outscore Atlanta and Cincy because pre-L Bell or post-L Bell, that defense right now does not look to be Super Bowl caliber. So they're going to have to, through the air, it's going to be on Big Ben, it's going to be on Antonio Brown to keep them afloat. Because if they lose their next two games, see, when he comes back, they are shopping him strongly. If they're 1-4-1 at the bye, then your trade proposal to the Eagles, to me, becomes very interesting. They are now trying to recoup an asset for him.
Yeah, the one thing with L. Bell, and we can't omit this information, being suspended twice plays a role in if they're going to give him long-term money. Now, people talk about L. Bell and the subject with Pittsburgh Steelers all the time, lack of guarantees, long-term contract, but they forget that the player put himself in this position, now the organization, how can I give that guarantee where this guy decided his body's not the most important thing? So now with him holding out, you know what he's saying now? Oh, my body's the most important thing. But there's been a time in his career where his body was not the most important thing, and that's put the Steelers in a tough spot where they could only franchise him and not give him the type of guarantees that his productivity would warrant.
Also, the timing works out well for him. Then you get come back on that bye week. You get paid for that week. Then you don't have to play a game.
100%.
Oh, yeah, but
He's given up about $4 million, but he does get that $855 for the bye.
Yeah, one day his kid is going to be looking for that money.
Coming up, is Aaron Rodgers right when he calls Green Bay's offense terrible? That's next on First Things First. Here, First Things First, former head coach Eric Mangini joins the show. Hey, Coach.
Good to see morning, you, Coach. How are you?
CeCe has an issue with the handshake. Nick hesitated for a second. He went in.
No hesitation.
No hesitation. You're right in. Hey, question for you. When is a 22-0 shutout in an NFL game not a great thing? When it comes at the expense of the Buffalo Bills, apparently, and when it's Aaron Rodgers doing the shutting out, apparently. Packers beat the Bills Sunday by the score of 22-0. Rodgers threw for nearly 300 yards and a touchdown. However, he wasn't pleased with his own or his team's performance.
Well, we were terrible on offense. That's what it was. It was as bad as we played on offense with that many yards in a long time. There was no flow to the game. There was a little bit in the first half. After that, we were championship defensive level and non-playoff team offensive level to that. That was not great by any stretch of the imagination. We need to find ways to get our playmakers in position to get some more opportunities. You know, a game like today, I mean, Devontae is a tough cover for anybody, but he should have 20 targets today. They really couldn't stop him. You know, and then they dared to play one high a few times. So we got to find ways to get him involved and Jimmy as well.
So we should mention Mike McCarthy spoke yesterday, said Rodgers' comments did not bother him at all. And I think, like what you said to me earlier this morning, like a lot of us, we saw this score and we didn't watch the game. We saw, oh, the Packers are beating the Bills. There's no real story to it. But what do you think about what Aaron Rodgers had to say? Did you feel like his offense was struggling at all during that game, that he was struggling during that game?
I think he needs to relax at this point. And we're talking about high-class problems here. They have 463 yards of offense, and this is the worst we've played when we've had that level of production. And I don't really know why he feels the need to air these things out publicly. Why he has such an impact on the game plan. He has such an impact on the decisions that are made. He talks about targets to wide receivers. He's throwing the ball. He's the one who decides where the ball goes. Now, the implication that the plays aren't putting the playmakers in the position to succeed, that's what I felt he was trying to get at. And then he talked about the different personnel groups and how that hurt the flow. But the relationship between the offensive coordinator and the head coach, that's a symbiotic relationship. That's a relationship that during the course of the week is constantly evolving and the game plan's evolving and he has tremendous impact. We're not talking about a first-year player. We're talking about Aaron Rodgers with a system that he controls a significant amount of. So if you don't like it, deal with it during the week. Deal with whatever your issues are during the week. Why do you need to go to the podium and express that? That part I don't understand.
When I played with Warren Moon, I'd never played with a quarterback like Warren Moon. 1994, we go out and get him from Houston. We're so excited. He taught me so much about quarterback play and understanding and some of the things that you have to do, some of the things you have to say, and some of the other things that you don't have to say. And we were in practice, and we had a route drawn up, and I'm talking, man, I crushed my guy. I killed him. And I'm out there waving my hands and everything, and I'm not going to say the wide receiver, but he threw the ball to our third wide receiver. And I'm like, man, what's going on, bro? Like, what about the chemistry? I'm out here working. And he pulled me to the side and said, first of all, don't never raise your voice at me. Don't never try to ever show me up, all right? I see everything. And so I'm working this system. I'm showing the coaches that's the play they design. That's the one they like. Our third receiver, he needs to know I got confidence in him. But when we get to the game, Chris, I ain't throwing to him. I'm throwing to you. In practice, I throw to them all the time. In the game, I'm throwing the ball who I want to. I'm driving the car. Brad Johnson, we used to call a play, and I might be the third read on this one. Brad would give me a little call. It was called, is there any doubt? And when he said that, no matter what route, no matter what the priority, no matter what the defense, he was going to look my way. Double team, no matter what. If I left the huddle and Brad said, is there any doubt, and looked at me, I know there ain't no doubt he's coming to me regardless of what they've called. So you're right, coach. You do handle a lot of this. This is what the elite quarterbacks do. And he was all right as far as criticizing the offense. But when he started specifically saying they're in single high safety, they're in man-to-man, they're in bump and run, and I decided to go where the coach wanted me to throw the ball compared to going to Devontae Adams, which the other elite quarterbacks, they would have thrown to him anyway. So a few times a year, Aaron Rodgers has press conferences where he's trying to send some other type of messages, and sometimes we can't interpret them. I believe this is one of those press conferences. I don't know what's going on, but I've had these press conferences before, so I'm not shocked about it. No different than him. He should have been a part of when they fired the coaches last year and a number of other press conferences he's participated in.
Jenna, to your point, this is one of the 1 p.m. Eastern games. It's the Packers-Bills 10-point spread. There's 9 games going on. So it's like on a screen, but you're not really paying close attention to it. They got up early, so it's 22-0. I didn't make much of the game. Check out the box score. Rodgers didn't have a great passer rating, threw 300 yards. It wasn't until I heard these comments yesterday on Game Pass, I went back and watched it. I said, what is he so mad about? And, yeah, they had, nearly a half dozen drops in this game. And, could the Packers maybe have scored 35? Sure. But the part that I think everyone keyed on is him saying Devontae Adams should have had 20 targets. That's the type of thing Devontae Adams might say. Like, as a frustrated wide receiver, I should have had 20 targets. But for the guy who determines who gets the ball, it was maybe there's something I don't understand about. I know that there is a design, like this play is supposed to go to this player. But
it's not, no. A play is designed, and the coverage is going to dictate where the ball should go, all right? Unless you think you can predict what the coverage is before you call the play. The coverage is going to dictate, but superstar players, they do this all the time. Like a wide receiver, it might not be the best matchup, but a guy gets hot, the quarterback starts to go to him. There's a number of other variables outside of that.
That's my point. So my question is, why would he not, during the game, just start targeting Devontae Adams as much as he wanted to? He's the guy pulling the trigger. That's the part of the commentary I don't get. Saying Jimmy Graham and Devontae Adams should have gotten more targets makes sense, even if it should be kept in-house, from any player on the team, except for the guy who throws them the football.
He should have said, I have to throw the ball to him. When he said we have to come up, that means McCarthy's got to create. He removed himself from that. He could have easily said, I got to take advantage of that. Devontae Adams, we cannot allow them to play him single high man-to-man safety.
And it was interesting, too. He said that we need to create these opportunities, and then he follows up with they were in single high. The opportunity was there. He identifies that he had those opportunities. But there's obviously some bigger issue going on. So maybe it's the multiple personnel groups. Maybe he wants to run more no huddle. Whatever it is, there was some sort of clash during the week that he, at the end of the week, is saying, hey, I told you so. We should have put 45 on these guys, and we only put, you know, what we put on
22.
So a message to McCarthy, almost.
Yeah, but you don't need to do it. When you're the highest-paid quarterback in the NFL, with the type of success that he's had, with the relationship, what's he going to do?
With the results of the game you just came off of.
And this is the thing. I could understand not playing to a certain level. You should have high expectations, all right? They did not play well offensively. When you look at that game, there was no one that said, you know, some Green Bay. He was actually supported by his special teams and the defense won the few times. He said, we played championship-level defense. And you're playing championship-level defense against Buffalo, and you only win 22-0. He does make a good point right there. He was not off in saying that. This was not a good offensive performance.
Coach, go ahead.
He could have easily said, we need to do a better job focusing and catching the ball when we have those opportunities. Mm-hmm. We need to take every opponent as seriously as every other opponent. There are a lot of other ways he could address this, but at the end of the day, he's not going to get benched. If he decides to go to a certain receiver in single high coverage, it's not like, oh, we're going to pull you. He's got a different level of leeway.
Coach, but this is on a big picture level. I've never heard you criticize Aaron Rodgers' abilities. But this is the type of thing that rubs you the wrong way about this player, right? And I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but
this is the difference between Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. This is the difference between the most accomplished and the most talented.
And everybody has a podium. The head coach has a chance to go to the podium. The quarterback has a chance to go to the podium. Everybody has a chance to speak out. But there's no value, there's no upside in airing the disagreements that you have or the differences of opinion publicly, because all it does is create a bunch of questions in the locker room, a bunch of things that guys have to talk about that have nothing to do with the next opponent. And there is no positive value to it. That's why I don't get it.
Just ask Ben Roethlisberger, because he's very good at it. Got to take a break. Coach, stick around. Coming up, can the Eagles wake up from their Super Bowl hangover? Next on First Things First. Back here with Coach Mangini. The Eagles had an up-and-down first four games of the season. The season coming off a Super Bowl win. The Super Bowl win, many thought, would catapult them to the top of the standings this season. Good news, Carson Wentz is back and looks good. Bad news, they're 2-2 and have an NFC Championship rematch on the way this Sunday against the Vikings. Coach Peterson admitted he needs to see more from this Eagles team.
Our understanding that for us to play like champions, first of all, we have to understand that we are champions. And you have to play. You're expected to play a certain way. Coaches and players here in Philadelphia with the Eagles. And it's my expectation. And when you don't live up to that expectation, we need to just zero down on it and figure out why. And the sense of urgency from players and coaches needs to sort of heighten just a little bit. It's not a panic mode, but it's a heightened awareness of who we are as a football team, where we want to get to.
I heard those comments and I thought that has to be the biggest difference between the Eagles and the Patriots. The Patriots would never come off a Super Bowl win, have any point in this season where Bill Belichick's like, we need a greater sense of urgency on this team. These guys perhaps are reeling from a Super Bowl hangover. Is that such a thing, Coach? What was your reaction to Peterson's comments?
Well, when I hear it and they're talking about we are champions, it's not really true. They were champions. Last season, they were champions. This is a new season. This isn't boxing. They're not wearing a belt where they get beat by someone and someone gets to wear their belt. They were champions, okay? And that no one can ever take that away from them. But now it's a new season, it's a new approach, and they've got to be able to do the things that they did well last year better than they did last year, because every single game they're getting the team's best shot. And a heightened sense of urgency, Well, why? Like, why isn't there a heightened sense of urgency? Why are we waiting to a quarter of the way through the season to say, okay, we need to play a certain way? That, to me, doesn't make any sense. And it's moving past everything that happened last year. Get rid of that. This is a completely new season, and you need to approach it like that. Stop living in what happened, you know, a season ago.
And that is incredibly difficult for every team. And with respect to your point, that was difficult for the Patriots the first time they won the Super Bowl.
Only the first time.
Right, but they learned from it. Like, yeah. Coach, you talk about it. That year in 02, you guys started off great and then hit the swoon, and then you were able to finish strong, but it wasn't enough. You guys ended up losing out a tiebreaker. But that's the only year that they then learned from that lesson. And then 02 or 03, they win it. In 04, they continue that winning streak into the year and were the best team in football throughout. Like, that's... So this is a tough thing for teams. We saw Seattle was able to prevent that type of malaise coming over them. They almost won a second straight Super Bowl. They obviously got back to it. But it's not that atypical for a team to, as defending champs, not pick up right where they left off. But I am very concerned about what happened this past Sunday. I thought this was a game that last year's Eagles win. I thought that was a game that this year's Eagles should win. You're up 17-3 against a very limited offense. I think the Titans can be an underrated team, but most of their underrated nature is their defense. And to blow a 2-touchdown lead against that team and to once again have your secondary, which was one of the strengths of your team last year, surprising strength, kind of bedevil you, that is, to me, a much bigger concern than is Carson Wentz yet at full strength or, you know, what's the health of the wide receivers? Because I have seen the secondary let them down each week of the season so far.
Yeah, to me, this is not about talent. This is about a young coach trying to learn how to coach. And he's doing it right before our eyes. That's the reason why he mentions we are champions. Hey, Doug, no, you're not. They gave you the crown. You got the ring. You put it in a safe somewhere. You're not wearing it around, all right? No, you're not the champ. We're going to crown a new champ this year, regardless of how you play. The thing I didn't like, there's a number of things that were alarming as a young coach. The number one thing was he said that we as coaches have to do different. Now, the players, we expect the coaches to be consistent. Now, if Mangini's my head coach, I expect him to set the table every week for how we're going to be. Now, if he comes in and changes, I don't know how to react. Now, assistant coaches, they're supposed to change. Now, you can tinker with them. They can come in a little more intense. If we're not playing good, I expect Mangini, if he's my coordinator, if he's my position coach, he is going to get in my butt all week. But I expect a certain consistency out of my head coach. So now... Okay, now the coaches are coaching different. This is like what you get in college where you have big traditional rivalry weeks and the coaches are coming in and now they're yelling at you more and everything. In college, we expect that. But Nick Saban talks about, you know something, we have expectations here in the building. That's what he should be talking about. The New England, they got expectations of what they expect out of every player every year. It's not about being there. We have expectations what we expect out of the players. And if you do what you're supposed to do, you do your job, it will equate in us winning a championship. But you have to earn that right. And I think that Doug is learning on the job. And that's what we heard in the press conference.
Coach, what does urgency mean? What does that look like when a coach walks into a locker room and says, we have to play with a better sense of urgency? Is that showing up earlier? Is that designing more plays? Is that no goofing around? Like, this was supposed to be the fun organization. So talk to me about what that word means if you actually break it down to the players.
Well, to me, that's the coach's responsibility, is to define what urgency means. Okay? So if there are certain areas that he feels the team or the coaching staff is falling short, what are those areas? His job is to say, this is where we need to improve, this is how we're going to improve, and this is the standard that I'm going to hold you to. But to just throw out buzzwords like urgency or take your pick. There's a million words that you can send out that say that mean nothing. The coach needs to come in with a plan for how you're going to address the problems that are there. Otherwise, the players look up and say, okay, you just want me to play harder? You just want me to...
Right.
And those things, you may get it for a quarter, you may get it for a game, but they're not tangible, they're not real, they're not things that people can grab onto and say, okay, I'm behind this.
Yeah, they don't know what it's like to win and have the pressure on them. And I know Coach Mangini, he laughed. He laughed this summer when he started hearing about all the comments about, oh, it's so much fun. Oh, we have so much fun playing here. We knew this day was coming. This is the NFL. This is not the NBA. Golden State, they can say that. You know something? We're champions, and I dare anybody to say anything or do anything about it. There ain't nothing people can do. They are champions. I mean, what, three out of the last 4 years, they blew the other one. They should have won them all. Like, there really is not competition.
And in the NBA, it's dynastic. It's, we see it, guys.
What does that mean?
There's dynasties. Like, their teams usually win one.
I've never,
like,
heard that on TV.
Oh, okay. Well, and
Jenna,
first time for everything.
Go ahead, Jenna.
There we go. Well, way to be on my corner there, Jenna. Listen, what I mean is that we see teams in the NBA repeat. They come back. Like, that, the NFL, the last team to repeat was the 03-04 Pats. Like, the Seahawks came close. Prior to that, it was the 97-98 Broncos. Like, there's not a lot of teams that repeat. So, of course, it's different. Like, that, and the limited number of games makes it to where a little bit of a slow start or a little bit of a lack of execution can have a major change in your season. Like, I would feel totally differently about Philadelphia if they had executed their opening drive of overtime better. Because if they execute the opening drive of overtime, they get a touchdown instead of a field goal, they're sitting here at 3-1, and we're like, hey, they haven't played that well, they're still on top of their division. Those little moments really matter, and I can't define as to why it is the way it is right now for them, but they do not appear to be the same team they were at any point last year.
Look, in the NFL, it's a marathon, not a sprint, and you need to have your blinders on, and each mile marker, you need to be a little bit better than the mile marker before. You can't sound the alarm in week 4. Otherwise, you're going to get exhausted before you get halfway through.
You break it down into quarters, all right? If you can go 2-2 the first quarter, next quarter you go 3-1, next quarter you go 3-1, last quarter go 4-0. If they are able to do that, it's not about championships, it's about a standard. If they're able to do that, they'll put themselves in position where they potentially can move on in the playoffs and give themselves a chance to be one of the rare, rare teams that is able to repeat. But they got a long way to go.
The Cowboys in just a second, but first, back to Monday Night Football action. Pat Mahomes showing off last night. He can do it all, even get this off with his left hand.
He had to put in his left hand because he could feel those two defenders breathing on him. This was smart right here, making sure they don't go for the strip sack. He keeps the ball in his right hand, is closer to the defenders. Heads up play right here.
That was awesome.
It was in a critical spot in the game as part of the fourth quarter comeback. Huge third down conversion.
More from last night's game. Chiefs corner Eric Murray stealing the ball from the tight end Jeff Heirman for the interception.
Great effort right here. He sees the wide receiver get excited. Even though he's not looking back to the ball, he knows the ball's coming. Why? Because your pupils start to dilate, the wide receiver's eyes get big, and he will lift up his hands. His hands will take you to the ball. That's what defensive backs coach. Great job.
It would have been an excellent pass breakup. The fact that he was able to bring it down as a pick, steal it from him, was a huge play in the game.
Another Case Keenum underthrowing a guy wide open.
Man.
Yep.
I got
Case. Denver's going to get a case of the cases before the end of the year. I know this because I was on the bandwagon last year.
I'm
still
left.
Shaking from the case of the case.
Finally, NBA preseason. Magic, Sixers, Orlando's Aaron Gordon defies physics with this one right here.
Man, it's the preseason, Aaron Gordon. You're a dunk contest winner, man. Go try to boom on Embiid. Don't
reverse.
Okay,
how you dunk it? Show me how you dunk it.
Right there, instead of reversing,
where?
You try to go over him.
You go over his head?
That's the he says he's the best dunker in the world. Our dude who we see in the highlights every third day, B.A., whoever he is, he would have done it. That's what I'm saying,
the
see?
Old B dot
the
B
guy
dot.
That you want in the open competition, he'd have tried to boom on Embiid. Guy Dupuy, too. Him, too. Like Steve
that
would
guy.
Say. Like Steve would say. Him, too.
Moving on to the Cowboys. Currently 2-2.
There's
with
a better
most
chance of Joel Embiid going out with Rihanna tonight than him dunking on his head.
With most of the Cowboys' success coming courtesy of Ezekiel Elliott. He leads the NFL in rushing, 88 yards more than second-place rusher Todd Gurley, as Dallas has the fourth leading rushing attack in the NFL. So you see how impressive is Zeke's start to the year, considering the Cowboys' offensive struggles basically everywhere else.
I mean, this is what Zeke's supposed to do. He came into the season in the best shape of in his short career. Last year, he would have led the NFL in rushing if he hadn't been suspended. he would have led the NFL in rushing that year. So not surprised at all. This is what Zeke is supposed to do. I'm surprised that the Cowboys don't understand that it's going to take 400 touches by Zeke for them to be successful. But me, no, this is what he's supposed to do. He's got one of the better offensive lines in pro football. These are the type of results that he's supposed to have.
Before Travis Frederick got hurt, I said I thought he could have 2,000 yards. Once Frederick got hurt, I adjusted that down to about 1,800. Right now, despite the lack of workload through 3 weeks, he's on pace for over 1,700. He's on pace to run away with his second rushing title. And if you look at him, his career through four games, so rookie year, second year, third year, through four games, not only is this the most yards, but it's also far and away the fewest carries. Like, look at year one compared to year three. The yards are almost identical, but on 21 fewer carries, Zeke is leading the NFL in rushing. He's also leading the NFL in yards per carry for guys who have at least 50 carries. He hasn't been a volume back. We know that. But the fact that he's almost 6 yards per carry right now, the way he plays, where he hasn't had, it's not inflated by the 180-yard run this year like we see with some guys where they have one giant run. Chris Johnson, the year in for 2,000, felt like once a month he was having a 75-yard touchdown. Like, Zeke's just doing this by having almost zero ineffective runs. The runs where you don't get at least 4 yards or you don't get a first down. Like, he is, all of his runs almost have been,
and that's a credit to the offensive lines. That's a credit to no one missing blocks, no one being in the backfield. Even the Detroit game, there was 2 runs. The biggest run that he had, he made a guy miss in the backfield. So he created his own hole, but he only has to do that a few times because that offensive line's been so good.
If he is the bulk of the offense and hopefully will be moving forward because he's been so successful, are there ways to use him even more creatively than just a couple passes and give him the ball and let him just go? Are there other ways they could use him?
No, not without the – no. No, with no tight end and no wide receivers, no. There's no way. No, you can't hide him. No. There's no Madden video game. No. You saw him. They put him in the slot last week, first time he was able to catch a ball down the field. There's only so much that you can do with the running back. It's football. Put him back there and give him the football, and Zeke is going to be able to make yards. But their lack of having other playmakers around them, ultimately, that will hurt this football team.
And that's what I understand Cowboys fans justifiably were thrilled they got that win against Detroit. And Zeke was obviously the biggest part of that. Defense was, aside from DeMarcus Lawrence, a little shaky. Stafford had a lot of time. But when it took Zeke to have his first downfield catch of his career to just put you in position for the game-winning field goal, it shows the margins they're operating on. Here's my concern for the Cowboys, big picture. There are 4 guys right now, quarterbacks, on pace, 4 different guys, to break the single-season yardage record. The NFL, you just sent me a sheet, see, about all the different statistical markers a month into the year. They almost all have to do with records being set in the passing game. We got 8 guys
that
on pace.
That was my problem with Roger Goodell when they changed the rule last year with the catch rule. I told him, Roger, it's easier to play football now offensively than any other time. Now they came in with the quarterback pillow rule where you can't land on him. Now they made it easier to catch the ball where you don't have to survive the ground. Like, it's so easy. But the Dallas Cowboys, it's not easy for them.
Right. And so when you got there are 8 quarterbacks on pace for 5,000 yards. 5,000. There's only been 9 5,000-yard seasons in NFL history. You got a quarter of the league on pace to throw for 5,000 this year. Why am I bringing that up here? Man, it's sure hard to win a game 5 yards at a time today. In today's NFL, there's a reason. Like, rushing champs to win a Super Bowl in NFL history, it's Terrell Davis and Emmitt. That's the full list. And that was before the era switched to the way it is now. Like, I'm not saying the Cowboys don't have a path forward, but their path forward is so hard. They are doing it step by step while other teams are doing it chunks.
They're doing it the
old-fashioned
way. You used to use the U.S. Postal Service. You just put a stamp on it. They didn't know Brown delivered, and they didn't have nothing about FedEx, because that's what the passing game is to today's game. Next week, Drew Brees going to break the yardage, broke the completion. That's the name of the game. You do have one of the elite running backs, but, man, you have to be able to throw the ball. Those people you talked about, those rushing titles by Emmitt and Terrell, Look at the wide receivers and tight ends that played with those teams.
Right, they had Hall of Fame pass catchers.
Yes. McCaffrey, Rod Smith, Shannon. Okay. Like these teams.
Michael Irvin, Jay Novacek. They had real talent and, by the way, Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Like, by the way, as an addendum.
There is a team that has a Hall of Fame quarterback with a great wide receiver and a great running back that's getting another one back. Coming up, how scared should the NFC be of the Saints now that Mark Ingram is back? That's next on First Things First. On Thursday, we've got a big game as Andrew Luck and the Colts go into Foxborough to take on Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. Thursday at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Prime Video.
Another exciting game. We will go from Vikings, Rams, Colts, Pats. Looking forward to it.
All right, back here in First Things First, we are going viral. Magic rookie center Mo Bamba made his preseason debut last night. He was in a battle with one of the best big men in the league in Sixers, Joel Embiid.
I almost tweeted that right there. I was watching this game.
Mo Bamba posted this picture with the comment, "Welcome to the league, Mo," seemingly mocking Embiid.
Oh, no, I think he's quoting him. Because there's welcome to the bleeping league, Mo.
Well, this is what happened. They worked out together this offseason, and Joel Embiid was like, "Oh, I can't wait to welcome him to the league."
Okay, so here we go. Embiid responded with the comment, "Bruh, that's a block, layup, whatever that is. You were barbecue chicken on the post tonight. You had 4 fouls in 8 minutes, young fella. I would have fouled you out in 10. That's a welcome to the league." To which Mo Bamba commented, "Fair enough. I'll be back in the lab tomorrow to work on it." Until then, enjoy the poster. I'll send it as a Christmas card as well. The end.
Be patient with Mo Bamba. There is a potential for a Giannis-style projection for him. Very raw.
But don't think Giannis not shooting, because dude can shoot right now.
Absolutely.
You have to think about a different type of development.
I don't mean skill wise.
Giannis with the ability to shoot.
I don't mean skill wise. What I mean is they're not very similar players at all. What I just mean is a guy who takes major leaps year to year, and who, like Giannis, might actually still be growing as an NBA player. Giannis was his rookie year.
Fun to watch, though. He'll be fun to watch.
Absolutely fun to watch.
Time for stories to start your morning. Leonard Fournette will be out indefinitely after aggravating his already injured hamstring. Fournette had already missed weeks 2 and 3 with the injury and left during the first half against the Jets in week 4. Nick, how big of a deal is this for the Jaguars?
I don't think it's that big of a deal, because I don't think Leonard Fournette is that much better than T.J. Yeldon. I know he was drafted as such. He's paid as such. His production has not been as such. They built their offseason. See, as you pointed out, they added Andrew Norwell. They don't want to throw it with Blake Bortles a bunch. So I get that part of it. But I think T.J. Yeldon can give them the production they were getting from Fournette.
T.J. Yeldon is only a complimentary player. He is not a starting running back in the NFL. And as long as the team is run by Tom Coughlin and Doug Marrone, they're going to be a physical, run-first football team. As long as they got Blake Bortles, they need explosive players. So the team is built as if he's a star.
Well, the star in Tampa Bay has dimmed a little. The Fitzmagic has apparently run out. The Bucs named Jameis Winston their starter after yanking Ryan Fitzpatrick at halftime of the Bears game, the one they lost. Jameis will have the benefit of the upcoming bye week to prepare for his first start. That will come against the Falcons. CC, was this the right move for the Bucs?
Yeah, that was the only move that they had. They got one franchise quarterback on their roster, and it's Jameis Winston. It's not Fitzpatrick. You are not beating Drew Brees, Matty Ryan, and Cam with him, okay? Your only chance is if number 3 is out there, and you don't lose your job because of the suspension. We're getting ready to see a bunch of guys come back this week. We're not questioning, why are they starting? Well, what is Mark Ingram doing? Well, what about Edelman? They're in the lineup the same way Jameis should be in the lineup in Tampa.
And Jameis better hit the ground running, better look at like he is continuing his progression, because that defense is as bad as people thought it was going to be headed into the year. Now, the offense had been explosive, but they're going to have to score a lot of points in Tampa to win games.
All right, moving on to Aaron Rodgers. They beat the Bills 22-0, but it wasn't good enough for Aaron Rodgers. He called the offense terrible after Sunday's game. See, what was your reaction to Rodgers' comments?
I didn't have a problem with him telling the offense it was terrible. When he starts isolating the play calling, getting guys the football, he's taking a shot at the head coach. So this is one of Aaron Rodgers. He does this about quarterly. All right? He gives you about 4 a year of little zingers from his press conference. He lets people know that he's a little irritable. And I can respect that because I come to the office a little irritable every once in a while. But this is Aaron Rodgers, though. This is the way he does it. And you know something, Jenna? Just like McCarthy and him, you're going to have to deal with it. You know why? Because I got talent.
See, what do you always say? You like people's self-awareness, and that might have been your most self-aware moment on television
ever.
Of the year. That
was ever.
Listen, Aaron Rodgers, he said Davante Adams should have had 20 targets. You're the quarterback, bro.
Yeah.
Throw him the damn ball.
Right, absolutely.
As coach said, what are they going to do? Bench him? Like, I mean,
right.
He can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, I ain't the stir that stirs the drink, but I keep it chilled around here.
Let's go back to it. Just to recap a little bit. Moving on to college football now. Jimbo Fisher was caught violently grabbing the face mask of linebacker Terrell Dotson in Saturday's game against Arkansas. Fisher has been criticized for the incident by fans and media alike. He attempted to explain his actions yesterday.
Listen, I was trying to get a young man's attention. That's all we were doing. I didn't grab it. I didn't jerk it. And to keep him from trying to make it was an emotional – football's an emotional game. He was caught up in the emotions of the game and trying to get him shook up.
He was just telling me to stay focused, and he needed me. You know, and I totally understand it. You know, I totally understand it. The media was making it look more than what it was, but he was just telling me to stay focused, and he had my back no matter what.
Because I told him, I said, I can't lose you. You're our team leader. You're our team captain. You're our leading tackler. You call all the signals. You do everything. And I was just trying to get his attention. To get his attention, to keep him back in the game and not make a critical mistake and lose him in the game, you know, in a second. I was not trying to berate him. And if you look at the film, when I did it, I pushed him. I tapped him right on the head, and I said, no, we can't have you out of here, buddy. We got to keep you in this game, and we go, and I turned and walked away. And he understood that, and that's exactly what it was and all it was.
See, what was your reaction?
It's not a good look. And Jimbo Fisher, I know Jimbo. Jimbo, I would consider him to be a friend. He's a good college football coach. It's been a long while since the cameras caught someone doing that. And for the most part, people who aren't around football all the time, they would think that would have been out of football. But there are instances where, and they haven't been great examples.
Where coach, what would be out of football?
The actual grabbing of a player's face mask. That was normal part of training, coaching, getting guys' attention. The one thing that we have to understand is Jimbo. Now, he did shake him and he did grab him, but he does have a relationship with this player. He wasn't trying to chastise him. Typically, coaches are trying to chastise you or demean you and control you. Now, I don't like it. I believe he could have said the same thing because he's got a relationship. He's the defensive captain. He's their signal caller. And he's right. I can't afford to lose you in this game. It's just never going to look good, and people are never going to accept a college coach, high school coach, Little League coach. I remember one time I had a problem with the parent coaching Little League, and I grabbed her son. And she said she was going to file a lawsuit against me and everything, but she left out some critical information. He had just slapped one of his teammates. And she, in her reporting me to the commissioner and to the league, she left that information out. I was like, yes, I grabbed him after he slapped one of his teammates and one of my kids that I'm responsible for. I didn't hit him, but I grabbed him because I thought he was going to hit him again. So it's not a good look. Most college coaches, this is out of coaching. Jimbo, I like the fact that he did try to explain it because the optics and stuff, people will never, ever approve of something like this. It used to be a lot in football. I saw it a lot when I was in college. And when they used to grab me in college, I used to be over in the huddle mumbling, I wish he would grab me like that. I wish he would. Because most coaches, they know how to communicate with their players. Jimbo felt as if this was necessary in this instance. I think he could have done it a different way.
He didn't tap him on the head afterwards.
He tapped him on his backside. Now, a lot of times how you remember things and what they happen on the sideline, mm-hmm. Now, that's not the criminal part.
Right, of
all
course.
Right? Like, because you don't remember. But watch the whole tape. You can see that the conversation was not the normal grabbing a guy by the face mask, a Woody Hayes punch or anything like that. You could see that he tried to get conversation. You don't have to do that to get a guy's attention, though.
You don't have to do that. And the part of this that, and I'm glad you said college, high school, little league, we don't see this in the pros, But I would have such a smaller issue with it in the pros. Because the
No, you're not going to see this in the pros. I would have more of a problem with it in pro football.
Well, the reason I say it is this, is the power dynamic is so skewed. You've got one guy who's not only a grown man, but the highest paid employee in the state of Texas against a guy, kid on scholarship. And there's a reason that there are certain things that used to happen that don't happen anymore. Now, I will say I've learned something on the intense college coach front. I believe there is not a better human being that's a college coach than Frank Martin in the South Carolina basketball coach there. Now, he's become famous for his Frankenstein look and screaming and yelling. He would lay down in traffic for his players, and to a man, every player that's ever played for him loves him. And so visually, sometimes I see it, and I'm like, man, that's bullying. That's ridiculous. And some guys, it's how they communicate. But nobody gets to communicate by putting their hands on you. Nobody does. I'm not here to say in sports it's like a regular office. Why do you have to yell? I get it. It's a different workplace. Like, effective leaders in other workplaces don't scream and yell, but in athletics, they do. I get it. But you can't put your hands on the kid. You can't. And he didn't really apologize. He said, I didn't grab him and jerk him. He did grab him and jerk him. Your point is you misremember it to a degree. I also don't think it's fair to go to the kid. What's the kid going to say?
Right.
But the kid, of course, is going to say, no, it's all good. And maybe it is all good. And maybe the kid was potentially going to get himself thrown out of a football game. Or he was going to go out of control. If I'm the regent at Texas A&M, when I give Jimbo Fisher a 10-year, $75 million contract, it's one of the reasons is you can communicate your message effectively without
having to touch
without them. Using physical being physically imposing on a guy. Like, I think that's a real part of it. And so I just it's unnecessary, and it's good that it's no longer a big part of sports, even football.
All right, let's move on now. Let's talk some Mark Ingram. He returns to the Saints this week after serving a 4-game suspension for performance-enhancing drugs. Ingram is expected to add to one of the league's most high-powered offenses, which has been lights out with Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas. Ingram was so excited to rejoin his team, he met them at the airport on their way back home. CeCe, how much more dynamic does Mark Ingram make this Saints offense?
Well, first, Mark Ingram, outside of Drew Brees, is one of the most popular guys that they have there on the Saints team. Like, he's a great teammate. He learned this through his dad. Him and his dad and I are friends through a number of years. We came into the NFL with him playing with the Giants, him coming from Michigan State, me coming from Ohio State. So I've been knowing Mark since he was a baby. Like, I've been around him and everything. It's old development. He's one of the great teammates that you're ever going to have. Like, I haven't even heard anything about something like that. You know, a guy showing up from suspension to meet the team at the airport. Like, I mean, that just lets you know how special it is. He really misses football. He had a conflict as far as some cold medicine that he was taking that red flagged his test. That's why he was suspended, because it wasn't for taking anything, trying to get an advantage or anything. I know this because I've been training with Mark, or know the people who trained him, man, since he's come into pro football. So it's unfortunate to him, but it speaks to how much he loves the game, how much he missed the game. Now, Mark Ingram, Kamara in the backfield at the same time. Now Sean Payton, because he was concerned, how much wear and tear is Alvin going to have on him in these first 4 games? Now, they got out of it 3-1, but I think the potential, because Michael Thomas emerging, they got some weapons, and now putting them on the field at the same time. I know that Sean Payton, that's what he started doing last season. They'll pick up from that in game number 5.
They had some great escapes, and they needed them, right? Like, they escaped against Cleveland. They escaped against Atlanta. They dominated the game against the Giants. And so 3-1, they'll take it, especially with the schedule they had to open the season. Where I think he can help the most is their defense. This Saints defense is bad again. Now, maybe it'll get better at some point, but right now it's bad. How can you help your defense on offense? Time of possession, longer drives, give them more rest. Like, the Saints offense has been highly, fully functional all year long. So if you're already operating at 97% capacity, Ingram adding that is not going to add that much to your offense. Now, it is going to add to or remove some of the workload on Kamara, who's not built like Ingram, but it also can allow them to have longer drives.
But is that a good thing? If Kamara's the hot hand right now, do you want to take time away from him at all to change the offense even a little bit? How can you use Ingram so
he's
it undersized. Doesn't affect?
Alvin, he's undersized. He's not a featured running back. He's not a guy that you want carrying the ball 275 times. The reason why he was so effective in his rookie year was Mark being a mentor to him. Also, that's the reason why they had to let Adrian Peterson go, because he was emerging and he had to be on the field. But he is a situational football player. Now, over a period of 8 games or so, can he run the ball between the tackles? Yes. He surprised a lot of people. Now, people on the outside will be wondering, well, man, he's missed time as far as Ingram. Is he going to have a lapse like we saw with L. Bell last year? No, L. Bell missed all the training camp, missed all the OTAs. Ingram didn't miss that. And he kind of took a page from some of what he's learned from guys being out in his training this offseason. He trained at FAU, where Lane Kiffin is. He's training there in the ocean workouts with Tony Vellante and Bill Welly, guys who I know. They train Larry Fitzgerald, a bunch of others. They train Eric Berry, a bunch of other guys. So they've had tremendous success through the years. So I expect, Mark, this week, yeah, I expect him to touch the ball 15 times because he's in that type of shape. He's also had the pads and everything on. So his transition from the suspension being back to playing, I expect him not to miss a beat. Pro Bowl player in 2017, let's not forget.
He and Kamara, the first duo to ever have 1,500 yards both as running backs out of backfield. Like that, the Saints team last year was so different than the Saints teams that had been good prior to their 3-year swoon. They had 2 great running backs and a very good defense. This year, it's looked like the Saints we were used to pre-2017. A whole lot of Drew Brees, and Kamara's been very good as well, mm-hmm, but Drew Brees with a great wide receiver.
And Michael Thomas has been special.
He's been, absolutely. Michael Thomas has been outstanding. Real quick, you mentioned that for Edelman coming back, being on a Thursday hurts him. They play Monday. Does that extra day matter at all?
It really doesn't matter that much because they're not going to be physical. You know, what you're concerned about is how quick he comes back that following week when he's on a short week.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, can anyone slow down Patrick Mahomes and the undefeated Kansas City Chiefs? That's next on First and Third. Back here with Coach Mancini, Monday Night Football.
Wow, this just took a turn. If you watch the whole show,
Chiefs
this is taking a turn.
But mostly Chiefs. Pat Mahomes, his only touchdown pass came with 6 minutes left in the fourth. That was to Travis Kelce. His highlight was right here, though. Gets out of trouble, converts the first down with his left hand. All right, Chiefs then take the lead with under 2 to play. Kareem Hunt is in for the score and the lead. You saw it all. The Chiefs are 4-0 with the win last night against the Denver Broncos because of that guy right there, Patrick Mahomes.
It speaks volumes to this team and, like, how much heart and determination that we have, that the defense got up there, made a lot of key stops, and the offense just kept fighting. The offensive line kept fighting. The running backs, the receivers, everybody just kept fighting, and we came out with the win. I felt Vaughn on my back, and I knew I couldn't throw it with my right hand, and I knew we needed the first down, and so I kind of just, like, shot-putted it to Tyreek, and he got the first down and made a great play. I mean, you just got to get the ball in their hands somehow.
Patrick Mahomes is a great quarterback. They got a great offense over there. I mean, it's nothing new. It's not a surprise, you know, what type of, you know, team they are. We just got to capitalize and make our plays.
I love this team and just how we fight. I mean, we hadn't necessarily been tested in this situation yet, and it just showed that every phase of the ball, special teams, defense, and offense, that everybody can step up and everybody can make plays. And I knew we had it, and I'm glad we got to show it for everybody else, and we're going to keep it rolling as the season goes.
So Patrick Mahomes is under the impression that the offense, the defense, and the special teams all played a great game and came together. Before we break that down, what did you think of the night that Pat Mahomes had, Coach?
The thing I liked the most was, in a tight game, his ability to stay consistent, his ability to win at the end. I thought that's something that we hadn't seen because they'd been so far out in front of everybody. What I do think, though, is there is somewhat of a blueprint now on how to affect him, and that's bringing pressure. But it's the type of pressure, and this is where I thought Denver had a letdown. Bringing that 5-man pressure and keeping him in the pocket. He had 200 yards outside the pocket. If you can force him to make those quick decisions and keep him in the pocket, to me, that's going to be the way moving forward to slow this train down. And Denver did a lot of good things, but that's the one thing, watching the game last night over and over again, their inability to keep him in the pocket is the difference between them winning and losing last night.
Yeah, the NFL's got to adjust. I know that when we were facing Brett Favre early, like, we got tired of seeing him avoid the rush, scramble to his right, and do what coaches tell you don't never do. Don't never throw to the dude back over there. Yeah. Like, no, Elway was special with it.
Favre,
Aaron does it. Like, conventional wisdom, it's off the board because they have such good arm strength. They have the ability to be able to flight the ball across their body. And there's certain guys going to play this game that they're going to take chances. Like, they are out there to win the football game compared to losing it. So, I'm like, Coach, I like the grittiness. I understand Trubisky, 6 touchdown passes, that's nice. But this type of performance, I believe, has more of a carryover because I want to see guys struggle. I want them to be on the road because these situations, I believe, help develop your football character. Guys around you start developing confidence from that. So for me, it was much more than just an ordinary win. The grit of it, facing all that pressure, and his teammates seeing, because from a scrambling standpoint, when he's get on the move as a wide receiver, I love that. I don't have to get open on my initial pattern, and I can ad lib with him. You're going to see they're going to get even better at that. There becomes a system for how you get open when he's scrambling. And last night, you could see them utilizing the scrambling ability very, very well.
And a lot of the things that last week when we talked about the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, you said you wanted to see, we got to see last night. How does he respond to adversity? Well, he was bad through three quarters. Didn't turn the ball over, but that was really the only thing through three quarters he had done well. How does he respond to a deficit? The Chiefs had jumped out, I think 49-6 was their first quarter margin over the first three games. They had never trailed in a game this year until yesterday. How does he respond to a very difficult road environment? Mile high, national television. The Broncos haven't been great for the last 15 years. They've been up and down. They hadn't lost a home game in prime time since 2004. He checked all those boxes with those two drives in the fourth quarter. Show the numbers, if we could, the first three quarters to the fourth quarter. First three quarters, he was mediocre at best. The only thing he did well was not turn the ball over. In the fourth quarter, it was almost perfect. Like, there weren't mistakes. It's not like there were dropped interceptions. They were big plays. They overcame a second and 30. He threw a ball with his left hand with Von Miller pulling him down by his ankles on two back-to-back touchdown drives to win the game. Now, we haven't seen how he'll respond to turning the ball over because through four games he's yet to turn the ball over, but this was statistically his worst career game, and I think it was his most important and arguably his best career game so far.
Well, there was a mistake. It just wasn't called. They had the delay game that should have been called, and I know you're big on, you know, the officials, mm-hmm. how much they impact the game. So that was a mistake, but and I think they picked up like 20-something yards on, mm-hmm. on the play or
whatever
it was.
Yeah, that was a huge play.
Mm-hmm. But what this has done is those first three quarters now become a framework for everybody who's playing Kansas City to go look at Denver and say, okay, what did they do to slow this offense down? What did they do to slow him down? And to me, the mistakes that were made were by the Broncos in giving up edges to this quarterback over and over again. They're running line games. They're getting pressure and vacating the right, vacating the left. He rolls out, and they're allowing them to extend plays. I think Jacksonville will have a more disciplined rush, and I'm sure they're going to look at what Denver did and incorporate a bunch of that, and that's how it's going to go moving forward. Once you start seeing mm-hmm. where the cracks are, now he's going to get a bunch of
but
that.
Part of him, those 200 yards passing out of the pocket, which on the broadcast they said was the most by any player in a decade, you're telling me Denver made some mistakes, and I trust your eye on that way more
yes.
than I trust mine. But part of that is also his escapability. Like, part of that is his athleticism.
Yeah, well, but when you can force a guy, it's like a shooter. You can force him to a certain hand or force him to a certain side of the court. Like, we're going to let him scramble, but he's not going to scramble to his right. Coach Mangini is right. As the NFL develops in all players, we said the same thing about Dak. We say the things about running back. They come up with a recipe, and that's why we see guys struggle. So that's not, yes, they're going to look at it and be like, okay, we have to force him to scramble to his left. Now, we're going to see how many times he can scramble and throw the ball with his left hand, but that's what you want to force him to do, and that's what teams in the NFL are going to do going forward.
The hype machine is painful watching this guy. I mean, Showtime and every single throw he made is like, that's the most incredible throw I've ever seen in my life. And remember Deshaun Watson, the five games before he got hurt, he threw 18 touchdowns too.
And
the things are going to start catching up. Kansas City was 5-0 last year. Let's just
Okay, so listen, Coach, you've made it clear that it's not possible to impress you in a four-game sample. We know that. We knew it wasn't a three-game sample. Now it's not a four-game sample. But the Deshaun Watson comparison.
It's not possible for me to put someone in the Hall of Fame in a four-game sample.
Again, but like similar to last week, that's a straw man. No one's putting him in the Hall of Fame. I didn't come – the Showtime nickname notwithstanding, and that one I don't think is going to stick. But the Deshaun Watson comparison, what the difference is, and this is something I know matters to you, Deshaun Watson, while his electric stretch last year was, I think, second in the league behind only Kaiser in interception rate. He was turning the ball over a ton, but overcoming it. It has to matter he hasn't turned the ball over. He's now second most touchdown passes through 4 weeks in NFL history.
Yeah, but Coach has too many years, and we do this to every player. It would be, you're telling us to skip one of the processes that we always have for every player. Last year we had the conversation about Deshaun Watson. It was the same conversation. Yes, he was turning the ball over, but we're always looking for what they do, can they regulate that, and now that NFL teams, do they make the adjustment? It's the way we evaluate all players, and we're not going to change it for Patty Mahomes, Showtime, or whatever all these other nicknames. That is the way you determine, can this guy play in the league, or is he going to be a guy that's going to have a good half a season, 3 or 4 years? I think that's fair, and Coach and I, our eye is trained the same way, and that's the way we're going to evaluate the players.
And look, I am excited about the fact that he was able to, in a tight game, stay resilient, show positive traits. To me, everything is trending in the right direction. It's just you always want to slow it down a little bit, and I do think Denver gave a framework for other defenses moving forward.
He wants 3 to 5 years before you figure out if you think he's a good. I'm actually on your side. Is that true?
No, 3 to 5 is a little strong.
Okay. It's 2 to 4.
2 to 4.
2 to 4.
2 to 4.
At least knock 2. It down.
At least
around,
2.
Coach. Hey, coming up, will anybody be able to stop the Pats now that Julian Edelman is back next on First Things First? Thursday, we've got a big matchup as Andrew Luck and the Colts go into Foxborough to take on Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. It is Thursday. It is at 7:30 Eastern. It is on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Prime Video. Back here with Coach Mangini, it is time for Say What? Speaking of the Pats, Tom Brady has 5 Super Bowl rings, 4 Super Bowl MVPs, 3 regular season MVPs, and according to the 41-year-old quarterback, there's one more thing you can add to his athletic resume. Say what?
Entered the league. Oh, yep. I don't know how that translated into being a more explosive athlete. I just really want to get a kind of frame of reference. As a 6'4 quarterback, can you dunk?
Yeah. I haven't tried in a while, but I think I can. Maybe I'll put that on my Instagram one day.
Tom Brady.
Oh, they put him in the short shorts and the high socks. I believe him. He should be able to dunk at 6'4". I mean, he's not a great athlete by NFL standards. There's a lot of mediocre people, athletes that have regular jobs that can dunk at 6'4". I believe him. He should be able to dunk. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Should be, like, mandatory at 6'4", right? Like, once you've reached that height, shouldn't everybody be able to dunk?
Can I say this, though? If you like Tom Brady, he has given tremendous insight into who he is, what he does after games, his conversations with Giselle, the way he plays football with his kids. His Instagram has taken off this year.
Really?
After the game the other day, he was pumped and jacked up about it. He was throwing a ball to his kid. He was giving him pointers. Like, it was really nice to see.
I didn't know any of this.
Private life. It's because you're not on the gram.
Coach is on the gram.
I am. I tend to spend like 4 to 5 hours a day.
On the gram?
Just putting together my stories.
I don't think he can dunk. There's a reason why he hadn't dunked in a while.
You don't believe him?
I don't think he can dunk now. I was dunking at 51. I haven't dunked this year, but.
You could dunk.
Yeah, I think you could.
I think you could, too.
I don't know. I'm really, really close. Don't know.
We should see.
Okay.
Sticking with the Patriots?
Yeah, Nick can't dunk. I know I can out-jump him.
I've got video of it. Got video.
Now, I'll bet you $10,000 right now you can't dunk today.
Today? No.
Oh, okay,
not today.
Thanks. Okay, what day are we talking about?
I'm retired.
You got to get in the game first.
No.
You're like that dude at the Cavs game that dunked off the
trampoline. I'm Brady Edelman.
Patriots coming up
Nick's
a much,
got great
much needed win on
equipment.
Sunday, getting a much, much needed shot in the arm this week. Julian Edelman returning after serving a 4-game suspension. He also missed last season with an ACL injury. If you're wondering about his rust, Tom Brady, in addition to being able to dunk a basketball, says don't. Here's what he thinks Edelman contributes to the Patriots offense.
I think that's the thing about Julian, his explosiveness in the routes, in and out of breaks. It's very comforting for a quarterback to see a guy get open really early in a route. And, you know, Julian, we ask a lot of him. I mean, he plays a lot of different spots. I think he's capable of moving in and out of different locations and kind of specialty type plays. So there's a lot that he does well. And, you know, hopefully it's a smooth transition. And we've got to prepare this week. It's going to be a big week of prep. And then we'll go out there and play Thursday night and see where we're at.
All right, so what does Edelman's return mean for this Patriots offense, Coach?
This is huge. You figure in 2016, he was targeted 162 times. So obviously, him missing has been significant. But it's not just that. Tom's had to guide these receivers and help these receivers along the way. Putting Edelman back in the receiver room, having that other tutor, that other mentor in that room with this group that's trying to figure out the system and how it all works, to me, that's another added bonus to this. And now you've got three threats and the inside part of the defense between White, Gronkowski, and Edelman. There's three guys that they can get open in a lot of different ways and a lot of different combinations, and that puts tremendous pressure on the inside part, those linebackers, those coverage players that typically don't match up very well with guys like we're talking about with that type of short area quickness and explosiveness. So it's huge.
There's three areas New England loves to throw the ball to. The middle of the football field, love throwing it there, and both sidelines. And so when you have what you said in the slot receivers, that being Gronk and other guys who can either come out of the backfield or the slot, what they have now is they have comfort, all right, because they know what Edelman can do. There's a certain number of plays that he has specialized in the NFL and been successful. When you have guys like Josh Gordon, Hogan, Philip Dorsett, Cordell Patterson, you have a lot of unknown. You have a lot of variables that Tom does not like to deal with because it takes more time. When you have those variables, it makes Tom hold on to the ball more because he doesn't know what they're going to do at the top of the route, how quick they're going to come out of their break. With Edelman, he talked about that. Man, he's in and out of his breaks really, really quick. That's important to Tom, so it's a comfort level that they're going to have. If there's one thing that I want to watch with Edelman is he blew out his knee last year before the season started. It takes about a year and a half for you to be able to come out of a knee injury and be 100% healthy. So I don't think it will affect him to your eye when you watch him, but what I want to watch his yards after the catch as we go throughout the season, because your short area quickness, when you tear your ACL, it does affect you. So I am going to be watching, is that short area quickness effective? And after the catch, because he's really special after the catch as far as making people miss.
And having that guy in the room, to me, is really important because Tom's had to spend so much time trying to get Josh Gordon up to speed, trying to get those guys. Putting him in the room and adding that layer, to me, should help the growth of the rest of these guys. And in terms of his short area quickness, what have we talked about week in and week out? They've had trouble on third down. This is a guy that's going to help them, even if it's two or three more third downs a game.
Absolutely.
And extend those drives that they haven't had very much success with this season. That's going to be significant as well.
See, you said something really interesting yesterday that I didn't realize. You said that NFL teams, they can only consume film on basically a four-week lag. Like, they can, studying for a team, you can look at their four most recent games. It's why you said you would make sure at least once a month they threw you a deep shot just so teams had to prepare for it. When you're preparing for the Patriots right now, when the three guys you mentioned, Gronk, White, Edelman, they've not played a game together since November of 16. What type of preparation or film can you study given that situation?
You're based on concepts. They're trying to throw the ball in certain areas. They do it from a variety of different formations. So you have to study their concepts. When they go 3-by-1, when they go 2-by-2, when they go 2-backs, when they go a fullback, what do they like to do? So you have to go on those concepts, and those concepts are a little more predictable compared to what the athlete's talent. You know, they're not going to put Edelman outside. So you're not going to be studying things and preparing for them to throw the ball outside. You have to prepare for them to try to attack you down the middle of the field and in both flats with those three, either the tight end, Edelman, and one or two of the running backs.
One of the things that used to be really hard about preparing for Mike Shanahan is he was going to play you differently every game. And you had to figure out what you did poorly to anticipate the way he was going to attack you. And it's the same thing with dealing with New England. there are core concepts, but how they're going to attack you is going to be very different than how they're going to attack someone else. Look at Miami last game. A bunch of two-back plays, 40 runs, so different than how they played other games. So it's not as easy as just saying, okay, these guys are together and we got to try to figure out. It's looking at yourself and saying, what do we do really poorly? Because that's what they're going to attack.
Every time we have one of these players come back for whatever reason, coming back from injury, performance-enhancing drugs, missing a considerable chunk of time, we always say, well, how long before they're game ready or they get up to speed or all of it? How much does that relationship with Tom Brady, that chemistry, speed that process along, that there's less of, we have to get our timing back on, I have to figure out his game a little bit? I mean, how quickly does that come back, and how much ahead of the curve does that put them?
I would imagine that's going to be much easier than the physical side. And Chris mentioned it takes about a year and a half to come back from those injuries. That's going to be the more challenging component to me, with Edelman breaking down the scar tissue, really understand the game speed is different than preseason speed. So him getting used to that again will be more challenging than him being in the right spot or understanding how Tom thinks. That, to me, should be the easier part.
Yeah, it should be very quick because they spend so much time in the offseason working out together. Like, you know the guy's skill set. They spend so much time together, so that shouldn't be a problem. That will be ready to roll on Thursday.
But so the chemistry thing you don't think will be a problem, but as far as Edelman and game ready, the fact that the game's on Thursday instead of Sunday.
No, I'm just saying being in the building, getting the whole game plan. The team has 3 or 4 days before they break down things. Wednesday we would put in stuff. Then they would throw out stuff. No, you're not going to have those things. So I'm just talking about, as far as him coming from suspension, what you would like. You would like a normal, hard day Wednesday, hard day Thursday, button things up on Friday, rest on Saturday, travel, or get yourself ready for that game on Sunday. It's just an abbreviated, and he's just now getting back in the building.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.